Nance Haxton, welcome to Editor's Choice.
Thanks so much for having me, James.
Nance, what will people learn from taking a listen to this podcast? What sort of insights will they get?
I think it's just a really great opportunity to, I think through audio, to walk with Aboriginal people on their country at two very different parts of Australia and to actually hear about the return and revival of the Indigenous fire management practices that had been practiced in various ways on both sides of the country, all over the country for thousands of years, but of course were quite neglected, ignored, overlooked, however you want to put it, but were not used after white settlement. And this is just coming back now into vogue, particularly, I think, in the wake of the awful bushfires last year. James, this got so many people thinking, how can we avoid this happening again? And certainly, I think this return of an Indigenous approach to the land is a critical part of that.
I mean, certainly I've seen this sort of stuff happening in the Northern Territory. I lived in the Northern Territory for a little while. But just take us around the countryside. Is there much going on in this space?
Yes, so it's Stradbroke Island is where we start the podcast from. They had a very big bushfire there. It's only a small island in some ways, but an absolutely beautiful island and quite a big tourist draw card here in Queensland's southeast, Minjerribah. And in 2014, there was a very big bushfire there. At the peak time of year, just at Christmas, hundreds of people had to be evacuated. It really was an ecological disaster and a financial disaster for that island economy that really relies on tourism. But it was actually a really critical turning point for the Aboriginal people there, the Quandamooka Yulubarubi Aboriginal Corporation. And they took that as a real opportunity to say, hey, can you listen to what we know of this country? It's been passed down to us through generations. Let us have an exchange of information here. And since then, there haven't been as a big bushfire in that way. And they found that the big bushfires were quite often started by lightning. But by putting in the preventative fire burning practices of cool burns. The cool burns, the critical part of it, at the time of year that Aboriginal people know in the seasons, will not damage the landscape in that horrific way that the wildfires do when they just burn out of control.
Can you tell me about this word, this phrase, cool burns? What does that mean?
So the cool burns, from a Minjerribah point of view, it's very much about burning from the tops of ridges down the hills, so not from the bottom of the ridges up. It's making the burn go slowly so that it doesn't actually take out the entire landscape. It doesn't burn the tops of the trees. It just burns through the grass and the smaller vegetation at the bottom. But, of course, Jacob, the wonderful ranger that I spoke with at Minjerribah, is far better at explaining the concepts behind that. And I think it's also a wonderful way to hear that beautiful sort of circular way that they explain what this whole concept means. It's far more than even just preventing big bushfires. It's also relinking with culture and being able to walk on land that they haven't had access to for 60 years because of sand mining. So it's a really multifaceted benefit for the whole of society, I think.
Just putting it, like bringing it back to what it used to look like, taking other younger brothers and sisters, cousins and that, take them down there, and it's like, yeah, you're just blown away. You don't realise how much our mob have been locked out of our own country in such a short period of time. You know, we've got cultural sites here that dated 20 plus thousand years back, and think in this short, well, like I said, two generations, you know, in a short 100 years, you'd locked out of so much of your own country that our people once walked all over.
It's all coming back now.
Yeah, so we've got rid of all that mid-story fuel and try and get it back. You know, the wildfires were killing all the big trees. We're doing what we can now to get rid of that mid-story, get some more bracken, some understory, you know, get that lower fuel going good.
Sounds really complex, kind of putting it together. I think most people who don't have this knowledge would just go, oh, yeah, you know, fires. We don't want them to be too hot, but there's obviously all these different levels. Can you tell us a bit about what goes into it and what you're trying to preserve?
Yeah, well, mainly for us, we do, it's mainly out sort of hazard reduction burns around and stuff like houses or viewing platforms and stuff like that, or we just have our general planned burns that are to get the bush's health back, you know, and try and get it back to what it used to be pre-colonisation. And that's more, you know, throwing a light from the tops of ridges, letting it come down, burn as cool as we can, making sure that soil moisture's there, not too dry, and just, yeah, trying to promote that grass and the lower story fuel and not so much real thick mid-story fuel, stuff you can walk through comfortably, you know, not real thick that you can't walk through.
It's not always been possible to do that on his traditional lands and workplace at Minjerribar. For decades, large tracts of land on the island were off limits because of sand mining, meaning traditional owners couldn't access them.
It's a huge island, but I've been to a lot of places on this island that my parents had never been to. I know that my grandmother hasn't been to. You know, 2/3 of the southern section of Australia locked out from the mines, and we've been down there to some pretty culturally significant sites that my mother has never stepped foot on. And my grandmother, I'm not 100% sure, but pretty definite that she hadn't seen that. Look, there's so many places that I've been able to reconnect with that my family haven't been able to because of the mines and things like that.
That must have been really moving for you to actually be standing on that country.
Oh, it is.
Sand mining has now ended on the island, and Jacob is taking me on a walk through Mount Bipo Penbean on a bright summer's day just before Christmas 2020. He's reviewing a control burn that went through this area only a few weeks ago. Green undergrowth is already growing throughout the burn site, and wildlife is returning.
Since then, it's progress.
Oh, a couple of lizards, goanna.
Oh, it's a little one.
Oh, up the tree. Amazing. Well, there you go. The animals are coming back.
Yeah. No, definitely no shortage of wildlife.
But to Jacob, this renewal and regeneration is to be expected after what he describes as a planned cool burn.
Over the next 10 years or so, putting a burn in every 3 to 5 years will probably prevent, we'll definitely get it back to what the bush should be like.
And look, these beautiful, these have all come back. It's just,
you know, all the grass trees, they come back nicely, burn the skirts off them. Well, they've already flowered, but you know, it promotes that flowering.
Oh yeah, this one's got a big flower coming out of it. So it must be really rewarding to kind of be part of this and to see the country respond in this way.
Oh, it's real good, you know, like growing up, not really being educated about it in school, then being lucky enough to get a job as a ranger on my mother's country, and then being taught by our elders, even non-Indigenous people, teaching us about what good country is and what bad country is, and then being able to change that cycle and try and bring the not-so-healthy or the sick country back to good country. It's unexplainable how good it is. And to be able to do it, you know, which these days you need to have a paid job to provide for your family, and what better way to have a paid job working on your country, looking after your country.
In 2014, the safety of people on Minjerribar came under threat when a massive bushfire forced the evacuation of hundreds of residents and tourists from the island. It was a disaster, both ecologically and financially, coming at the island's peak tourist season. But Jacob looks back now and realises that was a critical turning point for the Quandamooka Yulabarabi Aboriginal Corporation, or KIAC, which now has much more say in how the fire threat on the island is managed. He says walking through this country today is proof that fire, when properly managed over years, helps regenerate the land.
I started a trainee rangership, I think, around 2009, and just watching that cycle, you know, back then we were more there to help and we were following people, but we were lighting fires from the bottoms of hills and just getting the job done quick, back then not knowing, and then to now see that change progress to the exact opposite, lighting it from the tops, letting it come back down, not only is there a change in us having a say how we manage our land, but there's a change in how it's done.
And is that applying knowledge, you know, going back more than 20,000 years, obviously, with the continual connection to country? Like, where does that knowledge come from?
I think there's mixed knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, we've both been taught from our elders and, like I said earlier, by non-Indigenous people how...
Bit of a mix.
Yeah, so, like, back when I said we were lighting from the bottom of the hill, you know, that was led by non-Indigenous people on our country, and then even now when we assist with fires, the non-Indigenous people are burning it the way we would burn it.
That's an excerpt from a new podcast from the Griffith Review from Queensland's Griffith University, my old university, I will say, looking at Indigenous land management and how it relates to bushfire prevention. And my guest is the journalist Nance Haxton. Now, Nance, you've also spoken to people from other parts of the countryside too. What are some of the similarities and differences the people have described to you?
So from Minjeriba, James, I was able to make contact with a group that I haven't really spoken to much before in my years as a journalist, up in the Kimberleys, up in the far northwest of this wonderful nation. So spoken to Chantal Murray, who is the women's ranger leader of the Noongar Rangers up there, and she explained beautifully as well how they have really brought back the mosaic burning of the landscape, where by burning patches of land on these vast landscapes, this is such a different kind of landscape to the small island on the east of Australia at Minjeriba. This vast landscape of 100,000 square kilometres that can take 2 or 3 days to drive out to where you need to go, by doing this mosaic burning, it stops what they call megafires. So these wildfires become megafires that just burn out of control and are so incredibly destructive. But of course, when Aboriginal people are allowed to come back to the land and walk the land as they have, Chantal explains this beautiful moment where they've actually been handed down maps from their people who put down all the sand dunes, the water holes, the places where they'd walked, so that they know exactly where to go and where to do these preventative cool fires so that the large mega fires don't happen.
But Nance, getting back to Stradbroke Island, one of the traditional owners that you spoke to believes there is much to be learned from the island. Can you tell us a bit more about this?
I think what he was really saying, Cameron Costello, who has been the CEO of Kayak, the Quandamooka Yulubarabi Aboriginal Corporation, for many years, but is actually outgoing now. But he sees this return of traditional Indigenous fire practices and knowledge as a real method of reconciliation, because everyone has the same aims at heart here, James. Everyone wants to protect life and property, and to bring the bush landscape back to health. Nobody wants to see sick country. I mean, to hear it explained in this way, it's like, yes, of course. And I think all of us actually have a feeling in us when we look at this country and see it burnt, destroyed in this way, but also see it before that happens, to see it not in good health. By bringing it back to the way that the bush landscape has been for thousands of years with some control is the aim, and then we can all live more harmoniously with the landscape.
We've had a couple of wildfires. So when you say the journey of the Quandamooka people in 2014...
That was the big one, wasn't it, 2014?
Yeah, there was a big wildfire, and at that point, I would say that that highlighted where the Quandamooka people probably weren't involved in fire management, particularly in emergencies. From our perspective, we were sort of not banging on the door of the Incident Control Centre to come in and play a role. And throughout that process, it became very apparent of the value of traditional owner knowledge on the island in fighting the wildfire. From that, it was like a catalyst of really engaging with us, and our young rangers like Jacob were coming through and being trained up in fire management. And so in 2017, when another wildfire commenced, and both fires commenced from lightning strikes from storms, so in 18 Mile Swamp, which is a peat swamp, and it just takes off. So by 2017, the collaboration and the training and the capacity building of young rangers coming through was just so, and I'll never forget it, you know, being the CEO at the time, because our young rangers had been trained up. And there was a moment in the 2017 wildfires where the wind was going to change at about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was having a very sleepless night because our rangers had the most intimate knowledge of the area where the wind was going to change. And so they were down there stationed. And I remember the wind you could feel outside it stopped because it was changing, and it was a sleepless night. But they came through, and it was like, for me, it was like this moment where they'd emerged as firefighting professionals. And that was amazing that our rangers were now in that space. And now I kind of feel like that's when they've gone, yeah, we're leading fire management. And the state government actually provided and let the Quantumbuka people lead the development in partnership with other agencies, the township fire management strategies on the three townships for the island. So we actually led that process. Those were developed, and then the state government actually contracted out for the Quantumbuka people to implement those. So when people into 2019 and into 2020 were talking about the national fire response, traditional knowledge and fire management, we were actually ahead of the game.
You're already there.
Yes.
Well, and is that something you'd hope that other communities could perhaps look to? What's the success of Stradbroke Island, particularly with fire management, and learn from that?
Yeah, I think there's a few layers in there. One is about the day-to-day management. So having traditional owners who live on country have that knowledge in day-to-day management. So they talk about cool burns and fire trails. Being involved in that day-to-day management is important, and the joint management of national parks is critical. That should be rolled out, you know, in my view, across the state, wherever possible. And so your fire management becomes ingrained. So traditional owner knowledge in fire management becomes ingrained in the day-to-day. Then there's also the, you know, once the emergency starts, what's the role of traditional owners being in that incident control room centre with the other agencies like QFIS and Parks and all that sort of stuff as well. So there's those layers as well. And then there's just the general, you know, cultural practices of fire for ceremony and stuff as well. So, you know, there's all those sorts of layers that we're involved with I'm just so really proud of the Quantumbuka people and what we've done and been proactive. And we hope that it's, like, we know that other groups who have different types of landscapes as well. So, you know, we're in a coastal landscape, not an outback sort of area. So wherever possible in terms of the East Coast or the typical, I think there's the models of management, but also I think there's opportunity for us to share and learn of other First Nations people about how they're doing fire management across the country too. And I think, yeah, wherever we can, we always want to work with other mobs and help them out. But also just generally, there's some wonderful expertise and knowledge amongst non-Aboriginal people who we've had come on country, walk down to areas and actually look at cultural landscapes and how we can map out how we're going to manage those with the collective knowledge. And it's almost a reconciliation process as well. The outcomes are all beneficial.
So it's a real mutual respect process.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And I'd just love to see that roll out across Queensland and Australia, to have that joint coming together of fire. And we are positioned really nicely with Quantumbuka, because we've now, like last year, got native title rights over Mulgumpin, which is Moreton Island. So we're looking to roll out and enhance the fire management for Mulgumpin as well, which we're excited about. And, you know, working with local rural fire brigades and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's fire management's a great sort of collaborative and reconciliation space, I find, because we all have the same values of protecting life and property and, you know, wildlife and cultural heritage sites, so you can actually map that all out together.
Cameron Costello says the extensive bushfire on Fraser Island in late 2020 has been a wake-up call that fire management is a continual process.
And I think lessons will be learned from Fraser Island, from Gari, and all of us will want to see what we can do better and what may be learned and what resourcing might be needed. Our hearts go out to people in Gari and the traditional owners up there and everyone that's been impacted by bushfires across Australia in the last couple of years. And it seems like it's a growing danger. There needs to be a sort of a national focus on it and a national response, and so that we can all work together to make sure that, yeah, fire is our friend. And if we manage the landscapes properly, fire is an important tool to do that. And we should all work together to make sure it happens. You know, Jacob and the new generation are coming through with that opportunity. And what's great is that they know that their elders didn't get that chance, and so they understand, and they have that sense of duty and obligation, where they know that they're caring for country where some of our elders didn't get that opportunity.
That's one of the traditional owners there of North Stradbroke Island in a new podcast from Griffith Review, which is both a publication and a podcast. And my guest today has been Nance Haxton, who's been investigating this. You might also mention, Nance, it's part of the latest edition of Griffith Review, looking at these sort of issues.
Yes, so from the Griffith Review number 71, this journal has been going for quite a few years now and supporting great independent journalism. This one is about remaking the balance. So I think this podcast fits really well into that theme and looking at how we can live cooperatively within the landscape. How do we remake that balance between what we need from the landscape and also what we can give back?
And if you'd like to listen to the full podcast, look for Griffith Review via your favourite search engine or podcast player. Nance Haxton, thanks very much.
Thank you, James.